Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And so we're watching and then the camera cut him, and she goes, he does look like a cabbage, actually. I was like, no, I think it was more that he was a cabbage.
Hi, guys. Jack Grealish here. Delighted to say that I've signed a new deal with Aston Villa. That morning sky gave me a look. So I left.
As convincing a 2-0 win as they come. This is the sort of 2-0 where Matt Target has a shot from the edge of the box, where Marvelous Nakamba has a shot from the edge of the box. This is a 2-0 where he scored 2 goals in the first half, including an offside goal. Not including an offside goal, plus an offside goal. And you don't do anything in the second half, and it doesn't matter, the game's already been won. This was a 2-0 where you're playing Newcastle. So once you go 2-0 up, the game is as good as over. Yeah, it's exactly what you would have wanted from this game, Liam. Just beat Newcastle and move on. Like, everyone was sort of worried about the match, and that was only because anything other than a win would have been a really bad result. So Villa just got the victory and moved on.
Well, yeah, you say everybody was worried about the match. I mean, you were definitely worried about it last week until I reminded you that this was Steve Bruce's Newcastle United. I mean, pound for pound, the worst team Dean Smith's Aston Villa has played. They were pathetic, rudderless, gutless, unimaginative Steve Brucey. And they were so bad that it was almost an effective approach to getting themselves back into the game. Because there were a few hints that the Villa players were drifting off. I mean, it's really hard to play against nothing with any sort of intensity. And some of the players, and in particular, of course, Mings, started dicking around on the ball a few times. Like, when you're run by the owner of Sports Direct, your fate is sealed. Mike Ashley has turned Newcastle into a discount sports company and appointed a discounted bargain basket manager. Steve Bruce is a graying pair of Slazenger socks in the basket by the checkout that nobody wants.
Yeah, all he's missing is a cotton tracksuit bottom. Now, the thing that we do need to talk about is taking Jack Grealish off. I know people will laugh at this. I know, when Fernandes comes off for United, everybody has a little giggle. Like, you know, oh, he's so competitive. Blah, blah, blah. Don't take Jack Grealish off, right? Don't take him off from a footballing point of view. You don't take him off from an entertainment point of view. Like, we're still in the middle of a pandemic. Like, there's a duty of care to play Jack Grealish every minute they can play. And you don't take him off from an ego point of view. Like, especially, like, the way you don't take Ronaldo off, you don't take Messi off. Remember, we can still remember the time that Ronaldo came off in a match a couple of years ago for Real Madrid. Ridiculous carry on. Like, never happened again. Don't take Messi off. And you especially don't do it when he's playing with Aston Villa. It just does not happen. Like, Ross Barkley's coming off there, and he's a bit annoyed. But part of me is thinking he's a bit annoyed because he didn't play that well. Well, no, actually, Ross Barkley did well, but he's probably thinking he could have done a bit more. Probably felt like he could have done with the extra 15 minutes in his legs. You know, so there's a few more elements in that. He's not just sort of throwing his weight around. Jack Grealish is thinking, what the fuck are you doing? You're taking me off, and now we've got a attacking midfield of Ramsey, Elghazi, and Trezeguet. Like, this this is not my Villa, mate. Keep me on. This is what happens. I just thought, ah, look, I'm overblowing this. He probably doesn't care as of right now. But as of right now, it's 5 minutes after the game, by the way. But just it's just a dangerous thing to do, and it's just not a road I want to go down.
Yeah, I was just as disappointed as Jack. I mean, I watched the last 7 minutes just shaking my head, messing around with my socks. Leave him on. This game is shit.
Yeah.
Like, give me something to look at. This game was over before it started. Just let Jack Grealish run around. But that really tells you how bad Newcastle are as well. Barkley and Grealish weren't particularly good. They made a lot of mistakes. They overhit and underhit a lot of passes, and we destroyed them without our two, what, on paper anyway, our two most influential players playing particularly well.
And obviously Grealish is probably annoyed because, you know, he senses there's opportunities there to get more assists and get more goals, which is what he wants to do as well. And like, yeah, Newcastle were crying out for that. Like, you know, they were just letting people like stand 5 meters outside the box and do whatever they wanted. And as you say, Villa generally did something bad with it in those phases. But it was the most comfortable I've ever been watching a game. Yeah, like my girlfriend couldn't believe it. Like, she, like, normally she just gets the hell out of the room, and she actually sat through 60, 70 minutes of this match, not believing how just calm I was about it all. But there is, like, there's also an element, like, obviously Grealish being a bit selfish. Obviously Grealish just loves football. Obviously he's also thinking, what the fuck, like, keep me on. Like, maybe throwing his weight around a little bit, which I don't mind when you're that good. But there's also just a good element of competitiveness. Like, you know, I think Villa just want to bury teams when they can, and they want to just get better. There is, you can tell, like, there's that appetite in the side. And there was a great interview with John McGinn by Greg Evans during the week, and McGinn had a nice quote where he said, our job at Villa is to do something that hasn't been done for a long time. I'm speaking for myself here, but there's a few of us in the changing room, so he's speaking for a few of them. There's a few of us who believe we can go and do that. And it's like, yes, like, that, this is sort of what I've been saying to you. Like, you know, this is a season where Villa are on the precipice of making it. And it's great to hear somebody like John McGinn talking about, you know, we want to do something that hasn't been done at this club for a long time. And you know, obviously Grealish wants that more than anybody.
Yeah, yeah. And you've said it a few times as well. I mean, Villa are now just a really good team, and they are swatting aside these no-hopers that are knocking around the division. Anytime they've done really well against the big teams, and anytime they've come up against the bad teams, they've been far too good for them. Like, just way, way above their level. And add Newcastle to that list. They were absolutely dreadful, and Villa just made light work of them. And I said without Barkley and Grealish playing particularly well, John McGinn wasn't even playing. Yeah. I mean, this was just an annihilation without your three main centre midfielders playing. Like, and Dougie Louise playing out of position. It's really heartening just to see that they can just do that to, admittedly, a terrible team.
So, Villa, one game later, are the benefactors of the worst rule in football, which seems to have been used in football twice in its entire history. you know, Sky very quickly point out that, you know, this goal wasn't looked at for a potential offside because Fabian Schär has touched the ball and a new phase of play has begun. Honestly, the worst. I cannot get my head around that. Like, they think that Fabian Schär is controlling the ball there. You know, he is diving back and lunging to get anything on the ball because Ollie Watkins is standing behind him about to score a goal. And Ollie Watkins might be offside. We don't know. We'll never know because he didn't look, because Schär touched the ball. It is fucking bizarre. And as much as we complain about it on Wednesday night, and rightly so, like, we have to complain about it here. Like, I mean, Watkins might have been onside, we don't know. But, like, that is terrible. If that happened in Villa, we would be up in arms. Like, awful decision just to not look at the offside.
I don't know what your problem is, Conan. Like, the rules are very clear. If a defending player touches the ball in any context, regardless of what's happening, where any attacker is on the pitch, how much they're interfering with play, how much pressure they're putting the defender under, if that defender touches it, he has now played everybody in England onside. Clear as day, mate. Fabian Schär shouldn't be swinging a foot. No. It's an absolutely insane rule, and you're right to say it's come in the last 4 days. I mean, Schär doesn't try to deliberately play the ball unless Watkins is interfering with play. He's right behind him, about to tap the ball into the net. And, like, we can complain about the Mings one as much as we want. This one is, like, if I was a Newcastle fan, this is way worse. This is much worse than the Tyrone Mings one. This is absolutely disgraceful.
Like, he's sprinting back because Ollie Watkins is there. He's diving. He's touching the ball because Ollie Watkins is there. He has to act. He cannot act. Like, there's a striker. The only striker there is trying to score a goal. How is that not interfering with play? Fucking insane.
Yeah, it's absolutely bonkers.
But I'm so disappointed, by the way, just that second goal that Ollie Watkins scored. Such a nice finish. Nice run, nice finish. Offside, it's a shame, but just great to see, and you could tell his tail was up because of it.
On his bad foot as well. He did one later on in the game with his right foot, and the keeper saved it. Dougie misses a sitter. But to do that with his left foot and just to drill it into the bottom corner is absolutely magnificent.
Yeah, he's a great player. Speaking of bad foot, it turns out our boy Bertrand T has a right foot.
Hey, that's his second goal with his right foot. Remember that delicious fake cross he played and lobbed over the goalkeeper in Bristol?
Hang on, actually, I remember you comment, like, you had said initially that he obviously meant it, and then after a few weeks of evidence, and you realised he had no interest in going on to his right foot, you came to the conclusion that he must have missed it.
Yeah, I mean, but to be fair, the pass from Grealish makes Traore's decision for him. And to be fair, Traore, like, he executes it perfectly, but it's touched before that to come inside. Whatever Newcastle Muppet it was, take your pick. The touch is just delicious to give him the space to give it out to Grealish. The pass from Grealish is perfect, and yeah, it's an absolutely brilliant goal.
And VAR didn't bother again having a look at Andy Carroll wrapping his studs around Nakamba's shin. Like, this is another one of those, and I keep talking about it, and I want this to be brought into the spotlight way more. It's just too often now that VAR are trying to move on when they feel like they can, and nobody's going to be annoyed. There's a team 2-0 up here, it's in the middle of the pitch, yellow card's being given quickly, get the game going. Just, you know, let's not cause a fuss. Let's not slow this match down and have people complain. Are you here or are you not?
Yeah.
Like, let people complain if you think this is the right thing to do. Look at video technology, and obviously it is. Like, so shit, like, stop worrying about what somebody's tweeting. Just look at the incident.
Yeah.
It's actually going to be a very quick incident as well. Like, look, maybe it wouldn't be, but even just tell the referee to go over and have a look and then let him decide. But, well, that's obviously what would happen. You know, Andy Carroll, it's tight. Nakamba has got in very quickly, but, like, Andy Carroll does not need to be flying in studs up. Like, you never need to be doing that in football. So, actually, it should just be a red card all the time.
Yeah, no, there's no need for the referee to go over to the monitor. It's an absolute stonewall red card. Andy Carroll is a scumbag. He's an absolute scumbag. There's one in the first half where he just jumps into Martinez, and that sums up Andy Carroll. He's never getting to that ball, and he just decides, oh, fuck it, I'll just jump into the goalkeeper. Like, what?
Yeah.
The goalkeeper's completely out of control there. He's there. If he gets hit there, he's falling to the ground, so anything can happen. I'm being over dramatic. It's unlikely that anything bad can happen, but you're just taking advantage from somebody who can't protect himself. He's an absolute scumbag, and the tackle on Nakamba is everything you'd expect from him. Once again, been shown up as being shit at the profession that he's somehow contrived to become a millionaire from, despite how unsuited he is to that profession. And this is a player who has been given a shot by Glenn Roeder, Kenny Dalglish, Sam Allardyce, and Steve Bruce. What a fucking parade of cavemen. Like, that is the only reason Andy Carroll is a professional footballer.
And, you know, he was always a scumbag anyway, but now that he's done, he's finished, he's slow, he's grumpier, he's obviously annoyed that he's shitter than he was. He's a bigger scumbag, like, you know, by circumstance of him being physically worse, but also just by his, you know, his mentality getting worse as well. And, you know, the fact that Andy Carroll is another name that we can add to the list of people who have more England caps than Jack Grealish just makes me sick to my stomach. I think that's a good way to tee up some WhatsApp whinges, because it was a good game, good result. Not a good game, wasn't a good game at all. Good result. Villa have 17 games played. They've got 29 points on the board. But I've got some complaints to get out. So here we go. Some WhatsApp whinges. No team in the history of football has more passes cut out by the fullback than Aston Villa.
Yeah, I see you wrote that one down pretty quickly at the start of the game. Ross Barkley at it again.
It's like, how does this keep happening? Like, how can somebody so creative, so good usually, so reliable with his right foot, be under-hitting so many passes? You already mentioned it at the top of the show. Like, I mean, this pass from the middle to wide, and not wide to like the corner of the box, and always cut out, and it leaves Villa open as well. Well, tonight it didn't because they're playing Newcastle. But Steve Bruce's Newcastle, and just like, it's just so annoying because there's always an opportunity to create an easy chance, and they pass it up because they underhit a pass.
It's really, really frustrating. It's something that was luckily enough not too much of an issue tonight. But the whole start of the game, there was no zip from Villa. There was just they were playing the obvious pass, and they were playing it too late. And that Barkley one sums that up as well. They were really bad for the first 10 minutes. And then it was in and around that time, Grealish played this first-time volley round the corner. And like, it was just a simple pass, but he spun as he played it, and it was straight into Troy's feet. And that was just the signal for, like, let's get it to fucking Geller now. And then they just absolutely steamrolled him for the next 15 minutes. But yeah, that pass from Barkley was really frustrating.
Just to remind people who, or especially people who might be new to the podcast, WhatsApp whinges are stuff recorded in real time. So I just want to qualify that before the next one. If Villa weren't such fucking losers, they'd be winning this match 6-0.
Yeah. When did you... What point of the game was that sent?
Do you know, it was straight after halftime. Do you know, like, well, I think they came out with a decent bit of purpose, but very quickly dropped off. And then, because, you know, I was like, right, this is good. Come out, get the third goal, Newcastle will fall apart. And they just dropped the tempo. They dropped the smell of blood in their nostrils, and they just kept going back to Martinez and just played the game out, you know, to hit Peter to a halt. And it was just there. It was there to be... like, they thumped Newcastle. And it's funny because, like, 2-0 is usually my favourite result for exactly the type of performance tonight, where it just suggests, you know, control, that you were in control of the match. And Villa were 2 goals in the first half, but they could have just put them through the ground. They could have got Steve Bruce sacked tonight.
Steve Bruce is going nowhere, mate.
Yeah,
it was... But like I said it as well at the start, it's really hard to get yourself up for something whenever the other team just isn't playing. Like, imagine just the analogy I can think of, if the ball's running into the corner and I start sprinting for it, and then I turn around and realize nobody's following me. You just walk in and get the ball. You don't run full speed towards the corner to get the ball.
It's a good analogy.
Whenever you've got no opposition, it's really hard to keep it going unless you really need to. Newcastle are so bad, it's hard to explain. If anybody didn't see the game, it's like you won't believe how bad they were. Jamie Carragher picked up on something where it was 2-0 to Villa, and this is the classic 2-0 result in my head that Jamie Carragher was talking about, where you go 2-0 up and then you control the game from a defensive point of view. Newcastle had 30% possession whenever they were 2-0 down.
Yeah.
Get a fucking grip. You need the ball. You have to score 3 times if you want to win this game, which I assume you do. You're all professional athletes playing at the elite level.
Yeah.
You have to have some sort of hunger and desire. Even if you think your manager's a cabbage, even if you think that the club is going nowhere, a bit of professional pride. You're playing against a team that finished 17th last year. Now, I know they're a completely different team, but, you know, those Newcastle players don't necessarily know that. They're obviously thick. So try to win the fucking game. Do something. They were just standing off. They were just watching Villa play the ball around at 2-0 up.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
But you say get a fucking grip. Like, get a life. Like, what is the point of this? We talked about Sean Dyche. How does he get out of bed in the morning? Like, how does Steve Bruce look at himself in the mirror? I just see, like, you know, Sky Sports flashed up a graphic after the match, and I think it's like 6 losses in their last 8 games, 2 draws. It's just... it's just pitiful. Like, that would be all right. Well, it wouldn't be really, but it would be better if they were trying to do anything different. But it's just getting worse for them. Next WhatsApp wins. Even when Mings decides, I'm taking no chances and being decisive, he fucks it up.
That was one of the funniest things I have ever seen. Tyrone Mings somehow manages to put in a tackle while he's in possession. But not only that, he lost the tackle. What the fuck was that?
I didn't realise he was in possession until they showed a replay and Carragher said, he should have just passed it. Because I thought he just came out, I'm cleaning everybody and taking man on ball. It's like, you have the ball, take it away somewhere else.
Oh, it was hilarious. Luckily, our man Ezri was there.
Yeah, yet again, Ezri saves him. I think it was Ryan Fraser who went through. And Konsa, just on red alert, not trusting any of the Villa team anymore, just decides, I'll take control of this. Don't worry, Tyrone, I've got you again. Yeah. Enjoy the Euros, by the way. I'll be watching from home.
I'll be back here watching the 3 Newcastle attackers who are now bearing down in goal because you're a fucking muppet.
4th one, easily the worst corner I have ever seen.
Well, I don't remember it.
You don't, I can't believe you don't remember it. Jack Grealish floating the highest ball.
Oh my God.
To his fullback 20 metres out, who's has somebody marking him. So Matt Target has to climb up to win the header so he can head it straight back to the keeper.
Yeah,
what was that? That was just terrible.
Yeah, it was a terrible decision, terribly executed. Like, what was the point of that? Matt Target's not going to lash a volley from a floated corner or any corner into the top corner. Do me a fucking favor.
Yeah, he's not going to do that if he's completely unmarked. Never mind when he is marked and you just put it sky high into there.
Yeah, oh, it was insane. And even Target's decision to header the ball, just loop it over the top. I know he has to go up and win the header, but even that, it didn't really stop the counter-attack, which is why he went up to win the header in the first place.
Yeah. Last one. I don't know if you have any, but how is there a fat person refereeing at this level?
So I was actually worried before this game, because I had never heard of him before.
Yeah.
And I looked him up. He got his Premier League debut 5.5 years ago. And he's reffed 25 Premier League games since then.
Jesus.
So he's obviously not trusted. And he's done a whole load of... obviously, anybody who's refereeing in the Championship is a very good referee. But he's obviously never, ever won the faith entirely to be given more Premier League games. And this is a rearranged fixture just thrown in because we're in the middle of a pandemic. And I thought, oh, fuck. If Villa get fucked over again now because they've given this second-rate referee this second-rate game, I am going to be so fucking pissed off. Luckily enough, though, it was Newcastle that were fucked over by refereeing decisions.
Yeah. Look, the referee was actually grand. You know, it was fine, amazing. Yeah. But I just noticed it. I'm not body fascist by any means. But I just... like. Think of how many people play football. It's the biggest sport in the world. Like, you know, like the percentages to make it in football. We all know how tough it is. This is the Premier League, the very highest level of football. and there's a fat person refereeing. Like, I find it incredible when you see so many bad decisions, and I always have that thought. It's like, this is the Premier League. How is there a referee who's afraid to make a decision? Or how's a referee looking at what I'm looking at and getting it so wrong because it's that level? It's, by the same token, I just see somebody who's obviously out of shape. How is that happening? How is this the the best of the best referees in the world? And it's interesting that you say, like, 25 games, and obviously is thrown in for this rearranged fixture, because I bet any money that, and I bet you all the referees as well think this, and obviously the referees board or whatever, they think the FA Cup is the big thing this weekend.
Mm.
You know, so all the referees are being appointed to those matches, and I'm like, referees are so stupid that they will think, I better get an FA Cup match. You know, they'll think that's where to be. That's the equivalent to, obviously United are playing Liverpool this week, but that's the equivalent of United Liverpool. Like, that's the game I want to referee.
I couldn't tell you one result from the FA Cup today, and I am fucking obsessed with football. I haven't a fucking clue how anybody.
Yeah. I'm actually just like I looked to see, the only thing I looked for today was if the United Liverpool were playing today or tomorrow. And when I saw the list of fixtures, yeah, I didn't see them. So, Southampton beat Arsenal. There you go.
Fucking so a better team beat a worse team.
Yeah. Somebody was talking to me about the FA Cup fourth round, but or like how United are playing Liverpool again. It was like brilliant. Like, the winner gets into the FA Cup fifth round. Fucking amazing. The loser gets put out of the FA Cup. Like, this game could not mean any less.
Well, look, would you rather have been playing Man United in the FA Cup or playing against Steve Bruce's Newcastle tonight?
Yeah, it's a good point. Do you know what? No, I'd rather have just gotten the points on the board, because it's all well and good having games in hand, but when you're Villa, you're thinking, right, are we going to win these games in hand, though? That's the thing. Like, there was a stage there where, it was Leicester that were top of the league, and I was thinking, geez, if Villa win the four games in hand, they're top of the league. But I knew they weren't going to win all four of them, and they've already lost one out of two. But yeah, so we're going to get into some categories. I can't believe we drifted into FA Cup talk on the podcast. We should just ban that in the future. Sorry, it won't happen again. Bear with us. Categories and some awards after this. Roy Keane thinks Scott Parker is a dweeb.
In one single moment, your whole life can turn round. I stand there for a minute, staring straight into the ground.
Roy Keane thinks everybody's a dweeb.
World feels like it's caved in, proper sorry frown. Please let me show you where we could only just be for us.
I just thought, every time he cut back from Parker being interviewed, for some reason he was being interviewed two or three times before the game, and he's talking shit, obviously, and every time he cut back, it looked like Roy Keane was holding in a laugh, and it looked like, Carragher had that little knowing look that he has sometimes, when he knows what somebody's laughing at or whatever.
Like, he's a proper football bloke, and he tries to pretend that he's intelligent as well, so then pretentious football writers can get behind him. Scott and Roy Keane, just, that's absolute fodder for Roy Keane. He snuffs that out immediately. He hates bullshit, and you're right, he hates Scott Parker. Like, even at the end of that game, the story isn't fucking Scott Parker. The camera's on Scott Parker's face. Aston Villa have just climbed into the Champions League places, never to be dislodged. That's the story. It's not fucking Scott Parker getting spanked again.
The Ashley Westwood, he was playing award. I've got two nominations. One of them you could have predicted from 10 weeks down the road. I don't even think you would have gotten odds for it. Can you guess who it is?
It has to be Jeff Hendrick.
You're bang on. Of course it's Jeff Hendrick.
The start of the second half, the camera was obviously on this side. The camera was on Newcastle's right wing, and Jeff Hendrick just drifted into it, and I heard the commentator say his name, and I was like, fucking hell, Jeff Hendrick is playing. Christ almighty, that is just pathetic. By all accounts, he is emblematic of this Newcastle team for the last couple of weeks. I've heard nothing but bad things about him from Newcastle fans.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a stat as well that he was like 290 of something in terms of tackles in the Premier League, which is incredible. Like, you know, think about how many players there are playing every week in the Premier League. So you have 11 times 20 to start off with, so that's 220 starting. And then you have a few more subs each. Like, you'd be doing well to get up to 300 regular players. He's 290th in the tackle charts, and he's playing for a Newcastle team in midfield who have 20% possession in every game. His only job is to tackle and work hard, and he can't even do that. And like, he was just made for this award. Like, we know it from watching him playing for Ireland and hearing the talk about how talented Jeff Hendrick is all through his career. Jeff Hendrick actually had a really good Euros. I can't believe how well he timed that. He played really well against Sweden for Ireland, did well against Belgium in a 3-0 hammering, and he did good against Italy. So he had three good games in the groups, and he did one really good thing in the qualifying against Georgia when he took a pass to player. Like, this is what I remember. I shouldn't remember three games and 10 seconds of Jeff Hendrick.
You shouldn't remember him dribbling past a Georgia player. You didn't remember a Georgia game?
Yeah. I only remember because they won 1-0. They had a win. I think they had beaten Germany, and it was like, if they don't win this, what was the point of that? And Hendrick's moment of magic in the second half set up John Walters. And yeah, like, I actually do believe that he can do things. And he has just gotten himself into a mindset and into a rut where he just will no longer even look forward or think about doing things. And he is so comfortable playing with Steve Bruce. Like, probably moving to Burnley from Derby was a bad move for him, going under Sean Dyche, moving up a level into the Premier League. Probably does something to a man, feeling like a bit of imposter syndrome, and then just fading into that mindset. Like, I will just work hard and not make a mistake, because the Pavlovian response is, I'm getting rewarded for it.
Yeah, and the mistake he's making, of course, is not playing football when he's on a football pitch. I mean, my abiding memory of that Georgia bit of trickery that he did was how shocked everybody was. It's like, I didn't know Jeff Hendrick had that in his locker. And it turns out, despite John Walter saying afterwards that, oh yeah, he has that in his locker, the rest of us were all right. He doesn't have it in his fucking locker.
He had it one time and he threw it out.
And even when you were adding up those sums there, he added in 20 goalkeepers as well to the list of players that he's fucking behind.
Yeah, right enough. That's like, honestly, that is a joke of a stat. Like, you know, I just remember looking and, you know, there were some forward players who would have no interest whatsoever in tackling ahead of him. Like, you know, people who just probably had to do the odd thing. I don't know what he's doing if he's not tackling, to be honest. Like, that's the point. The only other player I have for this is another Newcastle player, of course. It's Callum Wilson, and it's not because I'm not trying to have a dig, because I know Villa were trying to sign him, and I know he's doing alright this season. It's just, I genuinely, when I looked at the team sheet afterwards, I was like, fuck, Newcastle were playing two strikers. And, you know, obviously I saw Andy Carroll, because he's a scumbag and he takes up a lot of space, and then Wilson was also there, and I was like, what did he do? And like, just the idea that Newcastle were playing two strikers in that game is unbelievable.
Well, this is the Steve Bruce way, Conan. Fucking 5-3-2-1-0, fucking nothing. They're useless. Callum Wilson was, he wasn't in the game at all. Andy, you're right, Andy Carroll floated past the screen a few times, like, just because he's so unmissable. And yeah, Callum Wilson, what is he thinking now? Like, that game really must have emphasized him how much he fucked up in the summer. How could he possibly have thought that going to Newcastle was a better idea than going to Villa? Like, what a fucking absolute cock up.
Like, the only thing I can think of, like, you know, money wouldn't have been an issue. It's maybe Newcastle would end up paying more, but like, all he has to say there is like, no, I want to go to Villa, you know, and that would happen. I'd say Villa were set on signing Ollie Watkins as well, and I'd say Smith was honest in maybe telling Wilson that, you know, and maybe telling him, you know, we're going to be playing Grealish, we're going to be playing Watkins. There'll be opportunities. You know, I'd say, but he just didn't tell him that you're going to be our striker to score 15 goals.
There's absolutely no doubt about it that Dean Smith wanted Ollie Watkins, and he suits the whole style of play in the system a lot better than Callum Wilson would have. But still, like, be an impact sub for Aston Villa over playing for Steve Bruce's Newcastle United every day of the fucking week. He would score more goals for Villa as well.
Yeah, it's like living off scraps. You let Glenn Whedon take a 90th minute penalty award, which could be renamed. You took Jack Grealish off award. just a bad managerial decision. I've got two. Sort of touched on it already. Villa dropping off in the second half. I think that might have been an instruction, just with the lack of tempo that they brought to the game. And like I said, Newcastle were begging to be spanked, and a third goal would have ended that game, and it would have, like, they would have lost all interest. And although Villa were just comfortable anyway, like, when you're 2-0 up, still a corner could just drop badly, Tyrone Mings could do something. You know, when suddenly it's 2-1 and the game's panicky when it does not need to be. Just, like, I thought the message in the break should have been, get out and get that third goal, because there was no risk. Like, you weren't leaving yourself open to Newcastle. You know, you could have been as adventurous as you wanted. That wouldn't have changed Newcastle's approach or how dangerous they were. They were still waiting for, I don't know what they were waiting on. They were waiting for a corner or something.
Yeah,
you know, so you weren't leaving yourself exposed.
But there was also no risk that Newcastle were going to score two goals. So the imperative to get a third just didn't exist. There was no need for Villa to try anything. Like, you could have taken off Grealish earlier, which would have pissed them off more. But, you know, the amount of counterattacks that were just available to Aston Villa, it could have pulled a hamstring. And I know this is doomsday stuff, but, like, you know, what is the point of taking that risk against this absolutely shadow team they were playing against?
Yeah.
Newcastle were not going to score two goals. If Newcastle were still out on that pitch with Villa on the bus back to their house or back to the training ground, wherever they're going, Newcastle still wouldn't be scoring. They're absolutely fucking dreadful.
I wonder, actually, if Villa weren't on the pitch, like, would Newcastle still be crossing it in and trying to score that way rather than just scoring in an empty net?
Still playing a 70-yard pass up to Andy Carroll and the old Callum Wilson's playing.
Yeah. And would Andy Carroll still be climbing over the top of nobody, you know, trying to get his head, like, just desperately on to the end of something with nobody marking him? Anyway, who do you have? Who won the IC Westwood Award? I have Jeff Henrik.
Jeff Henrik.
Yeah, definitely. Only our nomination for the Glenn Whedon 90th minute penalty award is Steve Bruce deciding to do things his own way. So that's two games now where he said, the gloves are off, I'm doing things my way now. 3-0, 2-0, and two hammerings. And again, this is sort of what we're saying. Like, they didn't, like, Steve Bruce's way is to do nothing and just hope that Andy Carroll scores a header, but, like, they're not doing anything to put Andy Carroll or anybody in a position to score a header. Like, it's a weird logic. It's like, let's just not take any risk and something might come off. But how can someone come off if you're not working on someone coming off?
Yeah.
It's strange. Like, how do you get a corner? Like, they got a couple in the end, but do you know what I mean? They're not putting any pressure, not trying to exploit anything on Villa's part. They're just assuming that something will drop, and it didn't. Like, nothing close to it dropped.
No, and even playing a 5-3-2, like, and it definitely very much was a 5-3-2. Like, Manquillo and Lewis were giving nothing. Jamal Lewis was a bit better than Manquillo, but, like, they weren't getting the ball into Carroll. So you have to assume that the Steve Bruce way is to just lump it long to Carroll, and he can flick it on to Wilson, the little and large. The problem with that is, Carroll's up against Tyrone Mings, who's as big and strong as him, and Konsa is marking Callum Lewis.
Yeah.
That cannot work. And he knows what Villa's defence is. The Villa haven't changed their team at all. Never mind their backline. There's no surprises about what Aston Villa are doing. So don't just go out and hope that Andy Carroll's going to flick a ball on to a player who can't beat the player that's marking him.
Yeah. Yeah, Steve Bruce wins this award. The Weimann meter.
Andreas Weimann, I can never hate you meter.
Yeah. Like, so going up. And actually, well, just on that, so obviously the I can never hate you reasoning behind this. Emmy Martinez has gone too far up, so he's not on this meter anymore. If he starts playing badly, then he might come back onto it. Somebody getting close to coming off his meter is Ezri Konsa, because he's going up again, and like he must be at the roofs now as well. And you talked about Andy Carroll. Like, there was one moment where Konsa was with Carroll, and rather than going up with him, he just stayed down and went to the other side, knowing where Carroll would turn. I just nicked the ball off him and ran out. Everything just looks so easy for Konsa. He's so fast. He's smart. He's calm. He's strong. Reads the game unbelievably well. He's brilliant. And you know what? I saw him walking off in the last game against City. Pissed off, obviously. Had another great game. And I just liked it. You know, he's just holding himself like a man who's grown up very quickly. I remember, I think I was not writing him off, but having questions about him after the, did he score against Burnley or Watford? And remember it hit off Tyrone Mings' arse, and he found out afterwards that it wasn't his goal. And everybody liked it, and he collapsed to the ground, you know, in disappointment. And I was like, Jesus. This isn't the mentality I want, especially not a centre half. You know, we scored the goal, won the match. Who cares, mate? And but he doesn't see, like, it seems like if that happened again, though, I think he wouldn't care because he sees his value and he knows that he's becoming a really good player, and that's what I like about him.
He's absolutely brilliant. Yeah, he's an incredibly clever and nuanced defender as well. Even just the way he closed off the space and the options for those three Newcastle players that he had to deal with because of Tyrone Mings' brain fart. It was just that sums him up. He was able to cover the space, and when he gets into that space, then he makes the right decision, which was just let the Newcastle player make a shit choice.
Yeah, going up as well. I think I've got four going up. Marvelous Nakamba. So Nakamba was very good. Nakamba was turning on the ball and looking forward. He was as sharp as he'd expect. He was as energetic as he'd expect. He didn't make a difference. He made a difference to the game. Cut out ball. And he kept it going very fast. And you know, I know it's easier against Newcastle, especially when they're playing three midfielders and one of them's John Shelvey, who's trying to cover the right wing, which is bizarre. He wasn't telegraphing his passes. They weren't as obvious. And as I said, there was more zip in his play. Looked good. No, I know, again, the caveat is against Newcastle, but he's moving up. I didn't have him very high.
No, and it is a very, very big caveat, but he was very good. Yeah, and I was annoyed and worried about it before the match. I was thinking, what sort of a replacement for John McGinn is Marvelous Nakamba?
Yeah.
And I'm not a big fan of switching your team around just to replace a player. I think you should just be bringing a player directly in. Because by bringing in Marvelous Nakamba, then not only have we lost John McGinn, we've now lost Douglas Luiz because he's no longer playing in the holding midfield role.
Yeah.
He's playing more advanced. So we now lost our most defensive player and John McGinn. So it was just needless, I thought. I thought Ramsey could just come in and do the job that John McGinn had been doing. But Marvelous Nakamba absolutely justified the decision.
Going up for the second week in a row, and probably for the first time that's happened, is Mr. Matt Target.
Yeah, I mean, finally our motivational technique, our tough love approach of pretending that we think Matt Target is shite, is paying dividends. He was sensational in defence against City, and he was solid again tonight, and he was absolutely vicious, vicious in attack. He was really good.
Like, this is a left back we can get on board with, right?
Absolutely. I assume this is the player that we thought we were signing.
Yeah.
The last two games, he's been really, really good. Bad in possession against City, but that's, you know, there's mitigating circumstances there. There's being swarmed by City players. You'd still like somebody who's a bit calmer and a bit more willing to take risks. But tonight, he was brilliant.
So I was thinking about it. You're right, like about the City thing. It obviously is. That's a caveat. How well they're set up and how manic they are. But and I did mention it in the last podcast what he needs to do to get better. What he needs to do, right? So maybe he's not going to be that player who makes the decisions and he's quick thinking and he's brave in possession. Obviously, he's got a good left foot. Every time he gets that opportunity to bend it around the back of the defence, he generally nails it. And vicious balls, as you said, good description. But what he needs to stop doing though is feeling like he has to give it to Grealish all the time. And like obviously you want the ball going to Grealish, but he is just giving it to him no matter what. Like you mentioned on Wednesday, the chip that he played him, like, you know, at the edge of the box, his own box, just like feeling like he had to give Grealish the ball whatever way he could, like, because that's affecting what's happening in those tight areas. Somebody else can get the ball to Grealish when Grealish is in a better position, but Target often just gives it to him and disappears in.
Yeah.
And you know, so maybe he just needs to play his strengths a bit more rather than us focusing on his weaknesses and him focusing on his weaknesses. Just either give it to somebody else and get down that flank where he can whip that ball in, or yeah, just stick to the tackling, saving your energy or whatever. But you know, we don't need him to be a player that he's obviously not.
Yeah, absolutely. And even by not giving the ball to Grealish as well, it'll save Grealish from himself. Because Grealish has a bad habit of dropping too deep and taking the balls in positions he shouldn't be. So if Matt Target just doesn't give it to him, Grealish will have to drift into the positions we actually want him to be in again. Yeah. Instead of just having the ball with John Joe Shelby up his arse and then having to play it back to Tyrone Mings. So Tyrone Mings can hit the ball as hard as he can.
Going up, Ollie Watkins. Yeah. We talk about this loads. I don't think I'll ever get sick of talking about Ollie Watkins, but I've got nothing fresh yet. He's just a brilliant striker. Like he does everything you want to. He holds the ball up better than I've ever seen. He runs the lines. He's smart. He's energetic. He gets out of the way. He does decoy runs to free up Grealish. You know, he's selfless. He's selfish in that he wants to score as well, which is good. He scored tonight, which is always great. Scored an amazing goal that he was offside for. I just love this man.
Ollie Watkins has everything. There's nothing that Ollie Watkins can't do in football. He's a perfect...
Is he lacking a bit of pace?
No, he's not. Ollie Watkins has got plenty enough pace to be playing centre forward. Especially...
No, there was one where I think somebody played him a good pass. Now, he wasn't through, and it was bouncing sort of in front of him, and there was a defender on the inside. You know, he ended up just pulling it back to Grealish. You know, he carried it into the box, turned around, you know, teed up somebody at the edge of the box. But I was thinking, Gabby goes straight to the wrong goal.
But you know what else Gabby doesn't do? Anything else that Ollie Watkins can do?
Yeah, that's fair. Sorry, what were you saying? I was cutting you off.
No, like he's perfect. Like, there was one where, like, I've never seen somebody with such a good first touch. It's absolutely, like, and it's not just his first touch is really clean and perfect. It's the type of passes that he's controlling cleanly and perfectly. Yeah. Like, there was one that Emi Martinez just booted 80 yards on the pitch again. I remember the first two or three games we saw Ollie Watkins play for Villa. We noticed this where he was just taking stupid balls down with consummate ease, cushioning the ball on his head that was just dropping from the sky with snow on it. And there was one there today where it was played out to the right wing, and he's running in the same direction as the ball, and he controls it with the outside of his right foot and just turns back inside. The ball's a yard away from him. It's absolutely ludicrous stuff that he makes look so simple. And nothing came of it. He just holds the ball up and plays it back, and it was fine. It was a good bit of hold-up play, and we kept possession. But he, like, just to have that in his game, but to also just have quick step over, drilling into the bottom corner, to have the cushioned header and the cleverness to see that Barkley is in a better position than him, so that Barkley can try that back heel.
Yeah.
Like, you know, every other centre-forward in the Premier League tries to score there, and the keeper just catches it in his stomach, picking cherries. It was... He's a brilliant player. He's so clever, and he's got an abundance of technical skills.
I only have... No, do you know what? I don't even have any players going down, but I've got one suggestion. Somebody going down on the meter. is Douglas Luiz. And we've already mentioned that he's sort of playing out of position. His role's definitely different. And like, he was actually grand, but I just thought in the second half, and again, this is all in the context of me growing frustrated then at how, you know, laboured the match became and how pedestrian Villa became. Just Dougie just seemed a bit more sloppy, you know, and he gave away a couple of fouls and, you know, lost the ball a few times, just with a lack of, like, I actually thought, you know what, in fairness, I thought he was really good in the first half. He was on it, he was alert, he calmed things down when things looked a bit frantic, and then just grew a little bit sloppy in the second half, I thought.
Yeah, we know that's in Dougie's game, though. This is the persistent worry with Douglas Luiz that he'll switch off. And though he hasn't done it in a few months, I mean, yeah, in a game like that, it's very easy to believe that Douglas Luiz will start drifting himself along with the game. He was the first person to do it. He led that sloppiness, him and Tyrone Mings, which is exactly what you would expect.
Questions we can't answer, but probably will. Does Jack Grealish have himself in the fantasy team?
Oh, that's brilliant. Of course he does. I didn't even think about that. Why was I confused about this?
I think that's exactly what it was. Yeah. You know, probably triple captained himself as well, knowing that he had two games.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, definitely.
Who do you think, actually, good question. So, do you think he has three Villa players in his team? You're only allowed three. Who do you think the other two are, if he did pick three?
Oh, it's definitely Ollie Watkins anyway, because he can control how many goals Ollie Watkins gets.
Good point.
And it's Ross Barkley, because we saw how excited he was about signing Ross Barkley. Maybe that's just because it was another player to mess around with up top. And he also obviously rates him.
Yeah, I think that's actually bang on. I was going to suggest a defender, but then I realised that he just doesn't care if Villa concedes. Like, I think he's disappointed. It depends on the context, but there was one stage where Cash was out of position. I think Bertrand Traore had lost the ball, and Grealish had filled in at right back. And again, I think Grealish knows now that he has to cover this run. He's now playing right back, and he just comes inside, doesn't care. He knows by coming inside he's maybe leaving a left winger to go down the flank and cause a bit of damage, but didn't care, just drifted inside and wanted to go back on the attack. So I think he did. I think that was clear that he did not care about getting 4 points for the clean sheet.
I'll just say it to you again, Conan. Does he know that he has to cover the left?
Yeah. That's a question we can't answer, to be honest. You mentioned Ross Barkley. Is Ross Barkley enjoying himself at Villa?
A couple of rueful smiles when he had one or two misses, that header that he definitely should have scored with, and the flick back heel. He must be, like, Villa are a really good team, and not only are they a good team, they're a good team who play good football, and Ross Barkley is a footballer, by which I mean he likes to play nice intricate football, so he has to be enjoying it. I mean, Douglas Luiz, John McGinn, Jack Grealish, Bertrand Traore, Ollie Watkins are all really, really nice, tidy, intricate footballers, and it must be an absolute joy to play in that front six.
Yeah, I think he is. Like, you know, big smile arm around Bertrand Traore as well, like the first one over celebrating with him.
Mm.
Do you know, it just seemed at the start, remember I was telling you at the start, it was like, you know, Chelsea player or England player and stuff on his Twitter bio. I just, it didn't seem as keen to, like, rush in with the celebrations unless it was him scoring. He seems part of it, a big part of it now. Maybe as well when he was injured, he just became a bit more ingratiated in the club. Anyway, I'm talking shit. What do you think Steve Bruce's team talk was before the match? Like, genuinely? Keep it tight. Make sure we're first at the set piece crosses. Keep an eye on Grealish on the left. I can't. Do you know what, actually? Oh, do you know what? The worst thing any manager can do, right, is constantly talk about the other team and how good they are and how, you know, how on it they're going to be. you know what I mean? Like, oh, they're a really good side. They're a serious outfit. They're going to be really up for this. This is a tough place to go. They're going to be in your face. Steve Bruce 100% is the chief of that shit.
Yeah.
Like, I'd say he does not shut up about how good the other team is going to be, and we need to be ready for it.
I'd say you're right about that, and then I say he ends it with, you know, just don't forget, lads, keep it tight, and we'll be there or thereabouts come the end of the game.
Do you actually, there's a good question, does Steve Bruce think that they were there or thereabouts come the end of the game?
I can just see on my laptop there that he flashed up on the screen being interviewed about 20 minutes ago, and I was going to mention it, and then I thought, oh, I don't know if I want to talk about Steve Bruce anymore. It's so grim. Just brings back too many bad memories, dark days in my life whenever I was a less enjoyable person to be around than I am now.
I was filling my girlfriend in on it, on the whole Steve Bruce thing. They're telling her what a nice fella he is, just not up to the job, but expect it more. And so we were watching it anyway, and the camera cut them, and she goes, he does look like a cabbage, actually. I was like, no, I think it was more that he was a cabbage.
Oh, Christ.
Who would you rather have, Mick McCarthy or Steve Bruce?
Oh. Mick McCarthy has got a better sense of humor, does he? Like, Jesus Christ, like, what a question to throw somebody.
How is this happening? Like, you're talking about fat referees. Like, this is the Premier League. Millions and millions of pounds at stake. And Steve Bruce is still managing at the highest level of football.
After absolutely cocking up at Aston Villa, one of the biggest clubs in the country, he couldn't get them out of the Championship. Like I said last week, they were 14th in the Championship when they had the best player in the country on the team. And then he went to Sheffield Wednesday and did fuck all.
Fuck all is right.
And then he gets his dream job after that.
After Rafa.
Yeah, like, would you rather have a punch in the face or a kick in the balls? Like, you know, that's the question you've asked me.
Who's the kick in the balls? Like, Mick McCarthy, like, cocked up in Cyprus, and now he's getting a job at Cardiff, and I bet that they've fallen into this trap, like, because they've obviously got rich owners, and they want to get to the Premier League, because, well, obviously, that changes everything if you get there, and they've gone for Mick McCarthy, and the stat that flashes up is no one, only Steve Bruce and, is it Neil Warnock, have got promoted more times than Mick McCarthy, and he's got promoted twice. And I thought, like, that's not even a good stat because the good managers kept their teams up and then progressed their careers. They're like, Dean Smith will never get another team promoted from the Championship because he won't be there. Brendan Rodgers won't get another team promoted from the Championship because he won't be there. There's a reason Steve Bruce has it four times because he keeps getting B-tier clubs. And Mick McCarthy has it twice because he's actually worse than Steve Bruce.
Yeah, like, not only did he fuck up in Cyprus, he fucked up with the only club in Cyprus. Apoel Nicosia have a monopoly there. This is like being in the relegation zone with Bayern Munich. That's the job he did over there. Now, I know they weren't in great shape whenever he got there, but Christ almighty, how did he get employed after that?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. He might get the Newcastle job after Steve Bruce. Last one. What the fuck were Arsenal thinking?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I've said this before. Whenever we signed him, and Bert Leno's obviously a good goalkeeper as well, but I was suspicious. Like, he had a good run towards the end of last season at Arsenal, but I was really suspicious because of his age and the lack of games he had played. Like, he averaged about 10 games a season over his whole career up until the point Villa signed him. I cannot explain it. It's absolutely ludicrous that he hasn't played 200 games, that he hasn't got a full body, like, you know, hasn't got a cabinet full of trophies, that he isn't regarded as one of the best goalkeepers in the league. Like, he's absolutely insanely good, to the point that against Man City and again tonight was the first time I saw him drop the ball. But on both occasions, I knew he was fouled. Because he just had to have been. Because Emi Martinez doesn't drop the ball.
Yeah.
And so like there was no moment where I sat up and thought, oh, fuck, they're going to score. Because I just knew it was a foul. I was completely relaxed. Just as relaxed as Emi Martinez is whenever anything comes into his box.
28 years of age. Like, he's only going to keep getting better. Is he the best passer? Like, he's not... He's probably not better than, say, Ederson or Alisson. But, like, maybe from his hands, he is. I know there was that amazing pass that Alisson played Salah, set him through that time. Was it last season or the season before? But, like, Martinez does this every game where he and he's always looking for it as well. Throws it up, pings it the outside of his boot. Like, anybody try to pass an outside of the boot pass? It's tough. It's so easy to get it wrong. And he never gets it wrong. He just puts it right in front of whoever's running. And he always looks so disappointed when nobody's running because it's like, I'll find you. Just go. Yeah. I'll find you.
It's great feet for a big man, doesn't he?
Yeah, it is. It's one of life's great mysteries. One cap for Argentina, although I see he's back in their squad now. Of course he is. Like, he's going to go from strength to strength. Like, he's the perfect age. He's actually, you could probably equate him to, like, say Villa signed Barkley. You know, Martinez is in that calibre as well. And if they go and sign somebody else of that calibre, then suddenly you're filling the spine. Douglas Luiz is going to get better. Watkins is going to get better. Oof, boy, I'm getting excited again.
No, like, Villa did such a good job of bookending their team. Like, Ollie Watkins and Emi Martinez have improved the team so much. And, like, yeah, I said earlier on, Villa finished 17th last year, and I know they've made improvements. Like, but when you think about it, it's not only are Emi Martinez and Ollie Watkins brilliant players, they've replaced Ali Samata and Oiran Nyland. Like, how much better Aston Villa is easily explained just by looking at those two incredibly important positions.
Yeah, that's it. That's it in a nutshell. And the good news is, it's Burnley on Wednesday night, so regardless of the result, it's like, I know these games, you can be nervous going into them, but there's a beauty in knowing that no matter what happens, you're going to be controlling the whole match, you're going to be dominating it. It'll be annoying. Like, think about the West Ham match, that was really annoying that they didn't win. Really annoying, but it was just enjoyable because you didn't feel nervous or under pressure. Like, that Man City game was arse clenching and stuff. But, you know, when you're playing these teams with these shit managers, you just sit back knowing that, like, you're going to be opening them up with regular ease, and you just hope, Jesus, remember the last Burnley game? Like, you just hope that one of them will hit the net this time.
I'll tell you what, if Aston Villa have 27 shots against Burnley this time and they don't score, I'm not doing a fucking podcast.
And you just hope as well that Chris Wood doesn't head the ball up into the air, and then Ashley Barnes volleys it in. You know, like, that's how Burnley might get you. Yeah, Wednesday night, 6:00. We're back on the road. Doesn't feel like a squashed fixture list, to be honest, does it? There's a whole big thing. Villa are playing 5 games in 12 days. It's quite spread out, to be honest.
Get used to it, baby. This is Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday. This is what it's going to be next season in the Champions League.
Might need to start making some fucking subs. Maybe Callum Wilson will come by that stage. Get his agent to reach out when Mick McCarthy takes over Newcastle. Well, that's all we have for you. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening the whole time. Give us an old review, please do, if you're using Apple on iTunes. That helps. And if you want to get in touch with us, just send us an old email at thevillapodcast@gmail.com. That's always very much appreciated, and we always get a bit of crack from people who do send an email. So that could be you. You could have your email read out on this very podcast. Best of luck, and we'll see you on Wednesday. The wind is calling my name, and I won't wait,
or I'll never get on. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.